All right, well, the clock has struck 8 o'clock, so I guess we should start, Sig.
Sounds like a plan. Awesome. So if anyone's got any questions, feel free to just share them, start typing them into the US Cast QA channel, and Ed and I will do our best to answer them. Maybe to start with, we can just give a quick background of who we are, just
Sure.
for folks to just get familiar with us. Why don't you go first?
Okay. Hey, everybody. Looks like we have Bradless, Dr. Hayes, and Efren in the channel so far, and Sig and me. I'm Edward Ng, and I'm a writer on QS. Usually post an article called Hold'em and Fold'em. If you guys don't know about that yet, you can go and check that out. I usually focus on the tournament side of things. Prior to my daughter being born a month ago, I would play quite a few tournaments on the weekends, a lot of PBTQs, some Grand Prix, and some SCGs here and there. So usually my take on things regarding MTG finance is from a tournament side of things.
It's actually kind of perfect that it's you and I tag teaming, because I would probably fall into a category maybe the opposite of what you are. So, I mean, I've been playing Magic since like 97, 98, around that time period. And for the first like decade, it was just casual, like, kitchen table Magic. I had like a Birds deck that was pretty sweet, and things like that, just whatever silly themes I can come up with. And
I
then
see.
I started getting a little bit more into serious play, and that's when I actually met Medina, and he educated me, Jonathan Medina, on the finance side of things.
I see.
So after like we were at the same LGS, and so I watched and observed and learned from him, and started kind of applying some of the principles myself. And then I got into Legacy, tried to play competitively, never really got a lot of traction with that. And then once my son was born, I couldn't really play as much. And then now I've got a daughter as well. So I've kind of gravitated more towards playing in ways that are just more like, formats that never rotate, never have to keep up with metagames, et cetera, which is why old school Magic has really resonated with me,
I see.
because the cards are great investments. They're super rare, they're super nostalgic, and I'd never have to worry about a metagame or a rotation or whatever. Like, the cards will never go out of style. So that's become my focus area most recently.
Cool. Yeah, and to just quickly play off that, I'm glad you mentioned a little bit more about, when you started playing Magic. Just to let everybody know, I started playing, I think, around December of 1994. So I started
Wow.
quite early. I didn't start playing competitively until about 1997. So it took me a few years to get in the competitive scene, and then I played competitively till about 2000. And then I played maybe a little bit in 2002 and one tournament in 2003, and then I stopped for pretty much almost 10 years. And then I came back in 2010. I think that was when Scars of Mirrodin came out, and I've been playing pretty much since then. So as I mentioned, I'm kind of a tournament grinder. Ever since 1997, the competitive scene bug hit me. So as you may notice, for everybody that's listening right now, I have this public spreadsheet, and I'm often looking at what's happening in the market daily. Check MTG stocks, MTG top 8. .com. I check Moto results every day, and every weekend I'm always watching the Grand Prix results and SCG results. So again, my articles have that focus on tournaments. So I'm usually up to date of what's going on pretty quickly.
That's awesome. I think I'm going to segue, because we got our first question. Thank you very much, Theater Nerd Guy, for getting the ball rolling for us here.
Yes.
So this is going to be all you, because
Okay.
I'm not as familiar with all the new cards.
Thanks for the question, Theater Nerd Guy. I think this is a really great question. Steamkin, I think, is it has I think my been my pick one of my picks for the cards that will probably be one of the chase rares of Guilds of Ravnica. I actually just bought 8 regular copies at $249 a piece, and I've been watching Card Kingdom and Star City Games and eBay and pretty much the market to try to find foil versions. And funny that you mentioned that, Theater Nerd Guy, because yesterday I saw a set pop back up on Card Kingdom, and it got sniped from me at $3.99. I was about to place the order, and as soon as I was placing the order, it disappeared. But today I actually placed an order on TCG Player for a playset at $6.99. So just to kind of put my money where my mouth is, I truly believe that it's going to be one of the chase rares of the set. The reason why, I think, because I don't know if you have seen the article from Frank Karsten, but let me look it up real quick, and I'm going to send it in the chat. It's a great article. I found the link. Give me 1 second here.
While you're doing that, I'll point out that Card Kingdom currently has 8 in stock at $249 non-foils. Yeah. Should I just like grab those now? Is that what you're saying?
I would get those. I think that's the cheapest I can find them right now. It's $249. I've looked all over the internet, and that's basically the cheapest I could find it. So if you want those, get those now at Card Kingdom. Whoever is going to do it, you know, first right now, we'll get them, obviously. They've been at $249 at Card Kingdom for the last few days. I've been checking them. Star City Games has them at $399, and their foils are still sold out at $599. So, Dr. Hayes, how high would you expect them to hit? I think the non-foils could hit anywhere between $6 and $10. $10 being the high end. I think realistically they'll probably end up between $6 and $8 somewhere. The foils, I told my friend yesterday on Messenger and Facebook, I think the foils could get ridiculously high, maybe in the $20 range, and maybe even $30 if they see a lot of play.
Don't mind me, I'm checking out.
Yeah.
This is live Matt and DG Finance right here.
I see the comment from the coach. I think the card is 100% Niv Magnus Elemental. I guess he's not on board with the Steamkin from that comment.
Yeah, I remember Niv Magus Elemental. I got burned on that one.
So did I.
It had like one good weekend. So if you put them on eBay like that weekend, you might have done fine. So what I'm thinking is by pre-ordering these from Card Kingdom, I can trust confidently that they're going to ship. And so if they have any success the first weekend, I can put them on eBay and basically sell them right before I get them.
Yeah, I think since if you buy them at $249 and they spike right away, you'll probably be able to get rid of them at like $4 or $5, so you can double up your money on them really quickly. That's why I think the $249 is a good price point. Anything above $3, I wouldn't get pre-order or anywhere near the release of the set. So it's just above $3 is way too high for regulars.
I spent these $20. Let's face it. So it's not like I'm really putting a lot at risk here.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason why I got the set at $6.99 is because I got eight normal ones. So if those spike up, the regular ones, to like $5, I'll just dump all of them, and that'll pay for my foil set. So the reason why I don't think it's quite going to be a Niv Magnus is because they work with each other. The second one pumps the first one, and it helps a lot with increasing the value of one mana cantrips, for example, like Faithless Looting, or even two mana cantrips that produce mana like Mana Morphos, and also draws you a card. So it can snowball really quickly. You can do really cool combat tricks with it, attack with it, cast instants, pump it up, gain, and then after combat, you can remove counters to get 3 mana to cast more spells. So it kind of breaks. It kind of breaks the rule of playing 1 or 2 or 3 spells a turn. It gives you more flexibility in playing more spells a turn. That's why I think the card is very good.
I think you bring up a good point. It might have some pretty strong potential in a format like Modern, where Mana Morphos and the cantrips and all that are so prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting take.
Yeah, and if you take a look at the list, it already plays Faithless Looting and Mana Morphos. There's another card that people have been talking about with it, and that's Burning Tree Emissary. That's another kind of free spell that also pumps it, right? because it's a hybrid card. It's red. It pumps it up, and it gives you mana. So it's kind of like a mana, almost like a Mana Morphos type card.
Excellent.
Yeah, it looks like we got
more. So
show 888. That might be a question for you, Sig.
We can do that one, but I don't want to skip Bradless. He has a couple. Yes. Yeah, okay, he's asking about 7th edition foils. Is the value real? So I'll start, but I think I'm going to give an unsatisfactory answer. I would say yes and no. I'd say I'm pretty confident there are collectors out there who are interested in finishing their 7th edition foil sets, and those foils are very rare and also very attractive. I've seen a number of them myself. So there is real demand for them. The problem is when there's only like 2 copies on TCG Player and people list them at silly numbers, then you end up in situations where NTG stock shows Circle of Protection Black, $80 for the foil, you know, and I don't necessarily think that that number in particular is real. But I do think that there is real demand. I think they really sell, but this is just me guessing on my understanding of the market. If you'll bear with me, I can search on eBay, for example, for any foil 7th edition cards.
Okay. While you do that, Sig, I'd like to add something there.
Yeah, sure.
First of all, Bradless, sorry about that. I didn't see your 2 questions after the taking questions on anything. It's funny that you mentioned that, Bradless, and you answered that, Sig, because I had a conversation with another friend about 7th edition foils, and the reason why we had this conversation is actually because of pre-modern. Now, I'd like to first start off by saying the pre-modern community has been growing quite quickly all over the world, particularly in Europe, because that's where it started from, by a guy named Martin Berlin. And I've been talking to him, and I helped launch the pre-modern USA page. So if you want to join that, you can do that. I'll send a link to you guys in just a second here. They mentioned that they're not interested at all regarding MTG Finance with pre-modern. However, it's kind of a niche community right now. So it's a little inbred to say that. Now, we can look at cards, like these 7th edition foils that are played outside of pre-modern that are still in demand, like, for example, Painlands. So cards like those are going to, you know, go up in value not only because of pre-modern, but because they have demand outside of the format.
All right, so let me spit out a couple of data points for you here. These are completed listings on eBay. What I'm seeing is the cards that are actually played are definitely selling with a lot of value. So you mentioned the Painlands. So I see like Brushland 7th edition foil. Now it was a best offer, so I don't know the exact number, but it was like $105.40 is what it was listed at.
Mm-hmm.
Goblin Matron $90. There's Pyroclasm $59.14. That's pretty crazy for that one. What else we have here? Foil Fallen Angel from 7th edition $20.50. Storm Crow $11.88. Gotta love that one. Sky Diamond $30. So, Foil Blood Pet 7th edition $35. So some of these random ones, maybe it's Pauper. Maybe that's another piece of it. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. There are definitely there's definitely a small group within the Pauper group that really looks to get the craziest versions of these commons.
Yeah, the most expensive ones. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because it's not that hard to buy in, and then once they've got their deck, they like to do cool stuff with it.
So hopefully that answers your question. So it is going to be very card dependent, and it's going to depend on whatever copies are listed on the market at any given time. I mean, if there's 2 listed for sale, you really do have the ability to kind of set the price for the market as long as you're willing to be patient.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's move on to Zshow888's question about Unlimited.
Yeah, it's another one for you, Sig.
The set Unlimited in 2 to 3 years. Thank you, Bradless. So that's a really interesting one. If you had asked me that like 6 months ago, I would have definitely pointed out that Unlimited cards were severely underpriced relative to Alpha and Beta, because Alpha and Beta had both spiked, whereas Unlimited was still lagging. But I think the Unlimited cards have finally caught up for the most part. I've been following Card Kingdom stock of Unlimited cards religiously because they still have their power underpriced, at least in the good condition copies. For whatever reason, they mark those down. I wrote an article about that. So I keep on waiting and hoping they stock a good condition Unlimited Time Walk so that I can snipe it for way below market price. But anyway, for the most part, they have restocked most of their unlimited stuff, and it's not really a steal anymore. It's not attractively priced. So I think we might be plateauing right now. Now, you asked like 2 to 3 years out. So I would say, just based on the trend so far, I would say that the trend should be continue to be upwards and to the right, and that the prices will continue to rise. But I think it might take 2 to 3 years to get that next leg higher. And I think a lot of stock has come back into the market at these new prices. People have to get used to the new prices before we see any real movement. The supply has to kind of dwindle all over again, just like it did. And that can take some time. So I'd say, if you're looking to buy some unlimited cards, I don't think you necessarily have to rush into it anymore. Like, I think you missed the last window, but there'll be another one. So you might want to just wait for the supply to start to get low again and then pull the trigger.
There's something I'd like to add to that from a tournament side of things, if you don't mind, Sig.
Absolutely.
And so with unlimited, again, I'm not that big into like old school or any of those kind of types of formats, but from a tournament perspective, I think unlimited basic lands are something you might want to consider. The reason why is because they're really cool. And more than just being cool, the reason why they're in demand is because people want cool white border lands, because it's easier to fetch when you're playing tournaments. And the reason why people want those is because, you know, they're just easier to find in your deck. In the past few years, I bought kind of a small stack of unlimited lands because I use them in my tournament decks.
Interesting. I didn't really think of that.
Yeah, there's the reason why I know about this is because there's some other white bordered lands that are very sought after. I think it's Portal Three Kingdoms, and particularly the English version of Portal Three Kingdom is very sought after, because that there was a very limited print run of those. So unlimited lands definitely do have some value. And there is a small group of people that look for these, especially the dark ones, the dark versions. Each one has a dark version. So if you were to get them, I would get those versions of the unlimited basics.
And I'll just mention one more thing. I mean, if you want to build an old school deck in the Swedish style, meaning, you know, no revise, no fourth edition, whatever, the unlimited basics are going to be your cheapest basics that you can get. And there's still plenty of them at reasonable prices. So, you know, they won't dry up as fast as we saw the Alpha and Beta ones, they did. But yeah, I think they're great to hear, hold.
Yeah, but I think 2 to 3 years out, maybe they will start to, you know, dry up a little bit. So there's still quite a bit of time, but that is probably something to look into now.
Absolutely.
Let's see. It looks like we had another one here too. Okay.
You're welcome, Z Show. Ask more questions. I refuse to answer the Stu Summers one.
Yeah, that was way up there. Okay. Yeah, it looks like we got a few more people in the room. Gnome Chaser looks like a new addition to the
welcome
to the chat. It looks like someone was typing there. Z Show still typing. Dr. Hazer still typing to see if they have some questions.
Yeah, everyone, don't be shy. If you want to ask multiple questions and no one else is asking, then
just fire off.
Take advantage. Yeah,
feel free to fire off the questions in the thread. How do you earn
more active in the finance with a limited bankroll?
Okay, so I'll go ahead and start with this one if you don't mind, Sig.
Absolutely.
The reason why I'll start off, Dr. Hayes, is because I actually do have a limited bankroll as well. If you take a look at my public spreadsheet, it looks like that I'm picking up a lot of stuff, but there actually aren't quantities listed there, which I thought about doing, but I haven't done yet. I'm going to share the link right now just so everybody has it. So back to the actual question. Hold on 1 second. Being a tournament, more focused on tournament playing, I had a limited bankroll because I just had to pay for all my tournaments and traveling around and stuff. And that's kind of one of the reasons why I got into MTG Finance when I started playing in 1997. I was 16, so that's gonna age me for everybody that's listening. I was born in 81, so you don't have to do the math. I'm 37. I just turned 37. So, you know, I was a teenager going to a lot of tournaments, and I would have a trade binder, and I did a lot of trading, a lot of grinding on the floor. I mean, this was back when it was the Wild West. We had Time Spirals being left on the table from Draft Chafe, and Tolarian Academies on the table, and stuff like that. It was pretty crazy. So I was definitely grinding hard. I know Adam Yurchik also did that when he was young too. If you take a look at his profile on Quiet Speculation, really, because again, you know, I was a limited bankroll, so I just had to really look at the tournaments, see what was going on, and invest in the right cards going forward. So I think if you have a limited bankroll, I think one thing is to really focus on is something like Modern, you know, because these cards are not going to rotate as they're not going to go out of style as fast. Legacy is a little bit different because the community, or I should say the amount of tournaments that are happening is a lot lower than Modern. So I would, that's one of the areas I would start to look at if you have a limited bankroll. You know, getting in with a lot of staples, lands are always definitely, you know, a good thing to work on if you have a limited bankroll, just because everybody needs land, right? I mean, it's the money in Magic. You can't do a whole lot without lands. And I also, I look at artifacts a lot. I wrote a few articles on another site called Galactic Treasures, and I mentioned that, you know, lands and artifacts, you know, are the some of the best cards to invest in if you don't have that much money, just because they go in so many decks.
Awesome. All right. So now I'm going to kind of go in a little bit of a different direction with how I answer this question.
Okay.
Hopefully it's helpful, but we'll see. So if you don't have as much capital to work with, you could still be more active with Magic Finance if you are willing to spend the time. And so there are some things that are time consuming that if you're willing to do, you can still grind out some profit and, you know, continue to build a bankroll that way. So for example, like the whole arbitrage grinding thing, you can find cards on TCG Player sometimes that you can sell to Card Kingdom or ABU Games with the trade credit bonus, you can get more credit than what you paid in cash. Then you can browse that store, look for some opportunities to get things that are maybe priced competitively with eBay and TCG Player, and then try to sell them for as close as you can to the amount that you used in credit to acquire them, so that you basically get that extra trade credit converted from credit to cash, minus maybe a small fee or something. So, you know, it takes a lot of work because you have to sit there and browse buy lists and watch them closely, and then look at TCG Player and maybe find some obscure websites like Card Shark or whatever. And it takes, you know, over and over again, you've got to just keep looking for opportunities. So it's definitely doable. I've done it many times before when I've had some downtime, but it can be really time consuming. So that's one way that you can be more active but without having to sink a ton of money into it, because you're constantly just flipping the credit and trying to keep, you know, keep your liquidity going. Another idea, which is probably antiquated nowadays, but it's how I did it when I was new to this, was just with trading. I know that no one really trades that much anymore, but, you know, because it's all about grinding trying to make the trade even, and, you know, you don't get to take advantage of people and all that, which is, you know, you don't want to do that anyway. But now that everyone's got a smartphone, everyone's lining up and trying to get to the equal penny or whatever. But I still think that you can be creative in how you move out of certain cards and try to acquire those more persistently desired cards, like the lands and the artifacts that you alluded to. So that could be another option. You know, trading is a lot of work, and like I said, people don't really do it as much anymore. But if you really have a limited bankroll, but you want to be more involved with, you know, keeping a fresh portfolio and having turnover in your collection, and trading is going to be an affordable way of doing that.
Yeah, you bring up some great points there, Sega. I'd like to add to that, because I don't think I quite answered his question, I feel, in a satisfactory way yet. Another avenue you want to look at probably is Facebook. I think the main point is, you know, what are your outs, right? How are you going to sell your cards for money to buy new cards or just retain the cash? And Facebook seems to be pretty good because, you know, it's based on friends and, you know, you have recommendations there. And you can easily post up something and say, hey, this is lower than TCG player, you know, 10% by 10%. And if you got it, you know, obviously cheaper than that, then you're going to make a profit there. So that's another good channel to look at if you're, you know, looking to increase your bankroll by doing some things like you said, say like trading. But as you said, it definitely is more time consuming.
Yeah.
All right. Hopefully that answered your question, Dr. Hayes. We'll move on to the next one. If it hasn't, Dr. Hayes, feel free to type in some more and we can answer those going forward.
Yep.
We have Data Nerd Guy after that. Thoughts on picking up Phyrexian Mana cards, things like Postmortem Lunge are gaining popularity. I think Phyrexian Mana cards are pretty still, some of them are still pretty good, particularly Mutagenic Growth. Foil versions of that I think are nice pickups. I think it was one of the cards. It's definitely one of the cards I talked about in my last few articles. You can go back and look at that later. I don't think Postmortem Lunge is a good buy right now because it's already spiked and it doesn't go in as many decks as, say, a card like Mutagenic Growth or Surgical Extraction or Gutshot. Surgical Extraction is tough too. It's spiked and it stayed really high for quite a long time now. So I don't really think that is a good buy-in because it's so high. I don't think they're going to really ever reprint these too much more just because of the Phyrexian Mana mechanic. So if you're looking to get in and want to use them, you know, I think Mutagenic Growth and Surgical Extraction are definitely ones that you would want to get. Mutagenic Growth being having a little more upside. There's also another one too that you might want to consider. It's the Phyrexian Metamorph.
Yeah.
But that one has a promo version, so there's definitely more supply of that one. But the promo one is kind of nice. It has different artwork, but they both kind of look the same. So the price on both of those foils are about the same.
And I know it's banned in Modern, but don't forget about Birthing Pod. I think that's probably useful in EDH, right? It's I have to imagine it's popular.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah. Is there any? There's some other ones too, but they're a lot more or less used.
But I think the overall principle for the Phyrexian Mana cards is they're really hard to reprint. Yeah. And so, you know, I think overall, if you see one that you like for whatever reason, you want to speculate on it, you think it's going to gain traction or whatever, these cards have proven to be broken time and again. That's why there's multiple ones that are banned across different formats, Mental Misstep being the most egregious. And then, you know, with the Phyrexian Mana, it's very hard to reprint. So those two things definitely make them compelling pickups.
Yeah, it looks like Theater Nerd Guy had a follow-up question to that, so I can answer that really quickly. Anything else unique like Phyrexian Mana you all recommend looking into? One thing that comes to mind is Delve. It's another mechanic that's a little bit broken. So highly played Delve cards would be something to look into. But again, kind of like Phyrexian Mana, it's kind of it's already a known quantity or known thing out there. You know, these are broken mechanics, so people have already bought into a lot of the good ones like Gurmag Aglinger, the price is already so high. But that is the other mechanic that comes to mind.
Yeah. I was gonna make a joke and say horsemanship. I think they're gonna have a tough time reprinting cards with horsemanship.
Yeah, or banding.
Banding, yeah, but there's no good cards with banding. There are okay cards with horsemanship.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. No problem, Theater and your guy. I think ZShow888 has another question here. Do you guys think if Arena turns out to be a successful paper card, prices hurt in the long run? I don't think so. You know, just because Arena is kind of its own thing, and paper is its own thing. Right? I don't think paper is ever really going to go away, just because of the nature of Magic. It's a collectible card game. And people still love to feel the cards and go and play tournaments and live tournaments. And I don't think that's really going to hurt the paper card prices in the long run.
I would say, let's talk about two different time periods. Let's talk about like 5 to 10 years, and then let's talk about further beyond that. I would say 5 years, even 10 years, I'm not so worried about Arena and whatever they're doing with online Magic. I don't play Arena or Magic online. I'm strictly the paper guy. I like the old stuff. I like the physical holding the cards in my hand. So that's really what keeps me interested in the game. But I think that the way technology is evolving, I don't know. I struggle to see a world where, you know, where Magic, where if it survives, it's owned by Hasbro. Hasbro is motivated to grow their brands, and if they're not growing, then they're they're not long for staying with the company. I mean, that's just the way that business works. So if they struggle to gain more traction with paper, and I do think that they could plateau in the paper world, then eventually digital could be the quote-unquote only way that they could grow the brand further. And so if we start to see scenarios where they throw more support to online versions of the game and less support to the paper, you know, like for example, online promos. Oh, you buy a box. Here's your buy a box promo. It's a virtual card that you can get on Arena. Like that kind of thing is going to slowly take away from the physical cards. It doesn't mean that all of them will become worthless. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty that you all can think of that will hold their value regardless, but I do have that kind of nagging in the back of my mind for 10 plus years out. That makes any sense. Not to be all doom and gloom.
I think to add to that, you know, I don't know if any of you have listened to the NPR podcast. I think it was 496. I'm going to look it up really quick here. NPR. Is there something with the Black Lotus?
It's so funny. When that podcast... So I haven't 609. Listened to it yet.
Yeah.
I haven't listened to it yet, but I had two separate friends from work text me and say, oh, you turn on NPR. There's a Magic bit on. Everyone knows I play Magic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and really, this is a great episode because it really doesn't almost have anything to do with like Magic gameplay at all. And it really just has to do with like the business side of Magic. And the reason why Magic is still around is because they started the tournament scene, right? And that's what really creates a lot of the demand for cards. Otherwise, you know, we'd just be playing kitchen table Magic and you know, people can just go in to the stores and buy whatever they need. But the tournament scene is what really drives a bulk of the demand. And yes, people could say maybe, you know, we may shift to more digital tournaments and that demand will still be there. But I have a hard time seeing that really happening in the near, you know, future, and near future being, you know, 10 years out. Again, just because there's still so many people that love playing Magic face-to-face, the interaction, feeling the cards, going and hanging out with your friends at a Grand Prix. You know, like I said, I'm a tournament grinder, but now that I don't grind as much and I have a kid and a lot of other things going on, I still go to Grand Prix when I can, but it's really about, you know, going with a couple of friends or a handful of friends and we have a really great time. And that experience is almost irreplaceable through a digital format. So, you know, so with that said, you know, I think there's still going to be a lot of demand for paper cards. Let's see here. There was... Theater Nerd Guy, I have a limited bankroll. This is a follow-up comment here. He mentioned something. I find pre-order booms are big hits for me. I just want to add one thing there. I've gotten burned quite a bit on pre-order, so I'm very careful with pre-orders now. I tend not to pre-order that much, even though I just talked about Runaway Steamkin. But the reason why is, you know, I got burned on Drogskull Reaver. I got burned on Thassa. What is the full name? Thassa something, the god, the blue god.
God of the sea, I think.
God of the sea, yeah, Thassa, god of the sea. I got burned on that one. I mean, these ones are like, you know, branded in my brain, you know, from pre-orders. So you have to be very careful because, you know, a lot of these prices are inflated, right? It's just like super hyped up.
Yep. And there's no supply.
Right. So right, there's no... There's no actual numbers to work off of yet.
Yeah, I very rarely pre-order. I did here just for fun because I wanted to, you know, get my feet a little bit wet with the new set. I haven't looked at it too much, but for the most part,
you can also jab me too if it doesn't work out. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, next time we do this.
Yeah. But, so yeah. Let's see. Yeah. Data Nerd Guy has another question here. That's a great one. Anything else you need? Like, for that we already answered. People aren't asking. So, thoughts on the new dealings with Watsi and Amazon? Well, this is a really big one, right? What's his name from Alpha Investment? Rudy from Alpha Investment did a really big video recently. I think, you know, I didn't really dive into it that much, but in my eyes, it's just a shift. You know, it's not like anything is going to die. It's just another way. It's another channel for Watsi to sell their product. I don't necessarily think the shops are gonna, you know, become obsolete. They're just gonna have to figure out a new way, right, to draw players into the store and buy product. You know, maybe they focus more on accessories instead of packs or singles, because, you know, Wizards still isn't selling singles through Amazon. They're just selling sealed product. So it's just a change in the business models for everybody.
All right, so I've seen some buzz on Twitter about this, but for my sake and for maybe others who are listening to this, can you give a quick overview of what's going on with Amazon and Watsi? Are they just basically selling product directly to consumers now through Amazon? Is that the idea?
Yeah, I think that's what's going on.
Do we know what the price points will be?
I have no idea on that. If anybody has any links to reputable links, please put that in the thread so we can dive into it. Is there anything else that you had to share on that, Sig?
I guess I would just express the same concerns that everyone else has expressed, that, you know, it seems like it would be bad for Wizards of the Coast to be biting a hand that's feeding them in terms of, you know, hurting the stores that are selling product for them. Like,
yeah,
I thought they had like a symbiotic relationship, and this seems like very competitive. So unless they're feeling like stores are not doing a good enough job, or, you know, whatever, maybe they're doing this so that stores can't charge more than MSRP. I don't understand mm-hmm. it.
But you also, I kind of got to think about it too. Going back to even this NPR thing, right? Why does Magic exist? You know, partly a big part of it is because tournaments happen, right? So, I mean, where people, you can't have tournaments on Amazon, you know, they have to go to the store to go to play at PPTQ or, you know, RPTQ or Friday Night Magic, or, you know, go to the store and draft on Wednesday nights, or play, you know, Commander with your friends. So it's just going to take a shift, right? And there's a lot of singles that happens in the store. Stores still have cases, you know, where they put lots of cool singles. So, like you said, Sig, they're Wizards, I'm sure, has done their research, right? A lot of people, you know, hate on Wizards and say the bad things about them and this, but then, you know, they're smart people. They're owned by Hasbro, which is on the stock market. They have the answer to a lot of shareholders. So, they do know what they're doing.
At the risk of derailing the conversation, I do see lots of talk as well about tournament participation dropping, like at GPs, you know, that the price of entering GPs has been going through the roof. You know, Channel Fireball controls all of them. You know, are they possibly trying to move away from a tournament scene type of model?
I don't think so, because they still do a lot of great things with the side tournaments. And if you ask a lot of people that go to GPs, a lot of people don't even play the main event, and they just buy that pass, and they can do, you know, the limited pass, the constructed pass, and they just jam as much as they want. And then I have a friend who used to play on the pro tour. He played a handful of pro tours, and now all he does is just go to GPs, and he just grinds the side tournaments for tickets, and he gets like cool, like foil, you know, foil sheets and like the big cards. So it's pretty crazy. I mean, that is pretty lucrative for Channel Fireball now running these GPs.
It's almost like they're making GPs more like conventions where you can hang out with friends, see different mm-hmm. booths and stuff, rather than you're just there to play in the main event and that's it.
Yeah, you go and check out the vendors, you maybe dump some cards, you pick up some cool stuff, you know, for your commander decks. Or even like, you know, this pre-modern thing that's happening, and they just have all kinds of crazy tournaments. They even have like the Turbo Town thing, which they came up with like the last year, which is really cool. You can just play like one person, one round really quick, test the deck. That kind of stuff is, you know, are big money makers for the people running these Grand Prix. I guess.
Next question.
Yeah, we have Dr. Hayes. How do you handle the risk of buying cards near a buy list value that may drop within days before
you receive them? This has happened to me before.
Okay.
So there's definitely a risk. So some stores will change their buy lists, from my experience, more frequently than others. Card Kingdom's the one store that I've been burnt on before, where I'll get cards for below buy list. They arrive in the mail and the buy list dropped, and so I can't make any profit of it off of it. So there's a couple things you can do. First, you can look at the stock that they have, you know, how many copies, because if they have, you know, if they have fewer copies, then they're going to be more desperate to leave the buy price higher. However, this is a double-edged sword, because what I see, I've been following Card Kingdoms for like a year now, and I look at their buy list like 3 times a day. I'm a little obsessive about it, because it changes that often. And so I see them falling into a pattern where they'll get bought out of a card, they'll run out of stock, and they'll jack their buy price up like crazy. And it'll seem really high. It'll be like TCG low, maybe even a little bit higher. But then as soon as they get some copies submitted, they'll drop it right back down again. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword. I try to shop for obscure cards and use those for my arbitrage. So, you know, I'm an old school person, so your random rares from the dark and legends and stuff. If Card Kingdom runs out of Grave Robbers from the dark, if for whatever reason someone buys those out, they'll throw like a $6 buy price on there. And, you know, if you're fast enough, you can submit a buy list and get those, you know, and get that number locked in. But if you hesitate it takes too long to get the cards, someone else is likely going to take advantage of that. And then the buy price will drop right back down to $3 again or whatever. So it's, I don't know if I'm directly answering the question because I'm kind of contradicting myself, but you got to pay attention to the amount of cards they have in stock, how aggressive their buy price is. Just because their buy price is above TCG low doesn't mean that they're necessarily like bullish and they're speculating on the card and they want lots of copies. It just may mean that they're out, and so they're trying to restock as quickly as they can. But at least by sticking to obscure cards, you're less likely to have someone else ship them a bunch. Like, chances are not many people have 10 Grave Robbers sitting in their collection that they're ready to take advantage of that. One other thing that I'll mention is Card Kingdom is pretty lenient. I think they give you 7 days from when you submit the buy price to actually ship the cards, like postmarked. So you can, you know, order the cards on TCG Player as soon as you get the confirmation that it's shipped. If you're feeling a little risky, you can submit the buy list right away. And then, you know, 5 days later, print the shipping label and then and ship the cards. You might be able to get away with that. I would not advocate pushing that too much, but that's another option. So you can lock in the buy price before it drops.
That's a great answer. I think sounds like, so you seem to be a lot more knowledgeable about that. And now, do you suggest, like, I guess maybe looking at multiple buy lists, right, to see what the prices are across the board, and it gives you absolutely more outs? Right?
Great point. Yeah. So like ABU Games, I don't see them changing their buy prices nearly as much. Now, I know that you're doing something wonky right now with super high credit and not as good cash numbers and all that, so that confounds things a little bit, but I don't see them changing as much. So if I'm going to buy a card that I think I can arbitrage, it makes me feel a lot better to see like two buy lists that are fairly competitive. Actually, like, here's a good example. Today there was an eBay coupon. I wasn't going to get anything because I just wasn't inspired, but I looked at a couple old school stuff that was on Card Kingdom's hot list, and I found Field of Dreams. They've got Field of Dreams on their hot list now for $100 buy price. And you know, I looked on TCG Player and the cheapest there in English were like 120. And there was a copy listed for 100 on eBay that looked like it was a nice condition. My fingers are crossed. So 15% off, you know, even with shipping, I think I paid $88. So, you know, I can choose to arbitrage that if I want to Card Kingdom. I suspect I can also get some good credit to ABU Games if I wanted to, you know, if I wanted a backup. I probably won't sell it right away. I'll probably keep it anyway. But that's just, you know, what I used to find what I thought would be a good deal, a good way to apply the coupon.
Cool. All right. There's another one from
Mythic. So from Efren is next, right?
Yeah. Are you either of you going to be trying to grab Mythic Guilds of Ravnica boxes? If not, why not? So I had a discussion with another friend about this, and I'm staying away from this because of the Planeswalkers, there are only, I think, two of them, two or three of them. There's Liliana, the Last Hope, and then what's the other highly played one? Are there five or six of them? Do you know, Sig?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Teferi, that's it. Mike answered. Yeah, those are the two highly played ones. And I think there's one other one too. And I would just buy those straight up if you really want them. I wouldn't do the mythic Gills of Ravnica boxes. I'm certainly not doing it.
Those planeswalkers are guaranteed in those boxes, right?
So yeah, the set is guaranteed.
There's not like a randomness component then. It's right. Just everyone's going to get the same thing.
Right. So maybe that's even a good point. Like, you know, if people are buying these, there's going to be quite a bit of supply because there's just so many of them out there. And I think there might be some numbers out there on if they're sold out or not with Channel Fireball for their Grand Prix. What is it? Grand Prix that they're doing it or something?
Something like that.
Yeah, there's a Grand Prix that's coming up. And I think that's where you can get them. You can like pre-order or like pre-order. And then go to the Grand Prix and pick it up. And I think they might have some numbers out there. Don't quote me 100% on that. But it seems like, you know, people have bought quite a few of these. So the supply is definitely going to be there. Now, I don't know if a lot of people are going to hold on to them or, you know, get them and dump them or what. But, yeah, I'm staying away from those.
I personally just don't know enough about the newer cards to make a smart decision about buying them. In general, there's always some opportunity to put your money to work in Magic, so I don't feel too regretful if I miss an opportunity here, skip one there. I know there's always another one coming, so I just try to be choiceful with my, you know, limited bankroll. It's like, I'm going to focus on some other things that I think are also going to go up in price, but more use for me.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Sig. Like, if you have two options and one is kind of like a 50-50, and then you're looking at something else, you know, and you're like, oh man, I done my research and I know this is really good. You know, you should definitely go with that versus the 50-50 option, right? Because you've done your more research, you have more hard numbers, facts, and you know that's going to be a good return for you.
Yeah.
So that's another reason why I'm staying away from the Mythic Guilds boxes, just because it's a 50-50 to me.
All right.
Let's see. We have another one from Z.
Z show.
Yep. Show. Yeah. You're welcome, Efren. Do you guys see a new format on the horizon? And if so, could you see Modern unbanning more cards and become a pseudo legacy format? I see an opportunity for some debatable Modern banned cards. Okay. So the newest format that I see is this pre-modern format, but I don't really see it taking off. Again, you know, I wouldn't look at it from a MTG finance lens, just because it's not supported by Wizards. The pool is finite. You know, it's defined. You can only play with those cards. I don't see them, you know, altering the pool anytime soon, just because it's just getting started. But go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt. I don't think that pre-modern or anything older is going to be a format that Wizards would consider. I think the one to talk more about is something like a frontier, something that, you know, is newer, is more likelihood. But anyway, continue.
Yeah. So Frontier is and Tiny Leaders and those formats, they're Brawl. They're dying, right? Or they're pretty much dead now. And so it's one thing that I've learned, you know, I wanted to play Tiny Leaders and Frontier and Brawl, and I just never got into it. One of the reasons, you know, because when I look at that, it's very hard to understand from a marketing perspective, right? You say Brawl, you don't know what that is. You say Tiny Leaders, you say what's the other one that I mentioned?
Frontier.
You don't know what that is. You have to ask more to figure out what that format is. But when you say standard, you say, hey, it's the five newest sets. You say modern, it's from Mirrodin forward. Legacy, it's from, you know, something forward. It's very easy to understand. And so I think that's why these formats, you know, have lasted quite a bit. Even something like pre-modern is very easy to understand. So that's one thing to look out for when new formats come out. I think you have to look at it from that angle. Like, is it easy for people to understand what the format actually is about, so that they can easily get into it and start building decks, you know, and there can be a tournament support for that format. So it's really hard to say. I don't really know what new format could come out because they have a pretty good coverage on the formats already based on the card pool that's out there.
I could see a world where Modern goes the way of Legacy and they introduce another format in between Modern and Standard. Eventually, you know, the card pool of Modern will become so large that
it's almost like legacy.
Right, right. And so I think, you know, you want to people to get value and utility out of their cards that are leaving standard, but, you know, are not strong enough to be in legacy. And soon it'll be like not strong enough to be in modern as well, just because, you know, the formats become so established.
Maybe it'll be like a standard plus.
Or, yeah.
I mean, or mini modern.
Right. I don't know what it would be called.
Yeah.
But do you think something like that is on the horizon, though? It doesn't feel like it's necessary yet. I'd say at least like 3 years out, 5 years. And I'm just guessing.
Yeah, because if you look at modern has really spiked over the last few years, and it's still very popular. From a tournament perspective, again, when I go to these PPTQs, these modern PPTQs are full, like almost maxed out. And there's like 40, 50 players in these local shops. It's just super popular. And so, you know, like you said, I don't think there's really demand for a new format yet. So, yeah, it's really hard to say on the new format question. But I do have a point on unbanning more cards. I had a discussion with one of my friends that I mentioned earlier. And I think Stoneforge Mystic is a card to look out for, particularly the Grand Prix promos. But they kind of already spiked. I did mention one of my older articles, but I could see that card potentially becoming unbanned in Modern. So that's a card to keep an eye on. The other one that we had talked about was Umezawa's Jitte. That could be unbanned as well. However, Jitte is a little bit riskier because even though it's an artifact, it's a legendary artifact, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. It only goes in certain decks. It doesn't go in really control decks, like Stoneforge Mystic can. It can go in control or aggro decks, and it doesn't go in. It doesn't show in multiples that much, so that's a little bit riskier. So if you're looking for banned cards, I would look at Stoneforge Mystic.
The only challenge with Stoneforge Mystic is so many people have already speculated on that one to be unbanned, right? So it's not it's not cheap anymore.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, I said just kind of keep an eye on it, but I wouldn't really spend a lot of money on that. I mean, if you need like a set, I think it's okay to get the Grand Prix promos now.
Yeah, they're not gonna print those again. I wouldn't imagine. But if they do reprint Stoneforge Mystic again, I could see them using that art.
Yeah, they could. So that's a little bit risky there.
But you know, there's no master set on the horizon that's announced yet, so you got some time.
Let's see.
Oh, Mind Twist Invocation. For Legacy speculation, people think it might be unbanned in Legacy, I guess, what Mike is saying.
Oh, I see. Interesting.
I don't know. I've heard people describe to me how miserable it is to play against a turn one Mind Twist. So yeah. I'm not sure that one will be unbanned in Legacy. But the art is sweet on the invocation.
Yeah. However, the invocations there, was it you? Or, no, I forgot if it was you or somebody that said that invocations and expeditions and all these are pretty much the new age reserve list, right? I mean, there's quite a bit less in terms of supply, and they're not going to reprint them ever again. So, I mean, if you really want to get it, those are pretty safe cards to pick up. I don't think they're going to really tank in value.
They are, yeah. I don't deserve any of the credit. I didn't coin that term, though. I think that was probably on a different podcast.
Okay.
But personally, for me, if I'm going to pick up a Mind Twist, which I actually just did, I'd rather have an Alpha Mind Twist. Because, you know, there's only a lot that were ever printed. And by the way, there are like so few out there for sale anywhere. So when ABU Games listed one, I couldn't help but, like, I just submitted a big trade-in and grabbed it because it's just there's so few out there. Like, in the world.
Yeah. Could I ask what you picked it up at?
What was it? So it was with ABU credit. I think it was, I forget the exact number, probably like 1349 or something like that. I mean, it's played. So it's not a great price, but you'd have to consider what I shipped them to get it. I mean, I had a bunch of played alpha commons and uncommons that I had bought for cheap a while back when I was collecting them. And, you know, they were sitting there and I noticed ABU was just going so aggressive on their credit for any random alpha card. So I basically traded them a stack of random alpha cards and then my beta Mind Twist and I picked up the Alpha Mind Twist, and then I picked up a Tabernacle from them. So, yeah, it felt like a good trade, even though the numbers themselves sound really high. You have to, like, basically multiply it by two-thirds to get, like, what it really cost.
Interesting.
Okay. So that's my preference.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, how soon do you think it will be before Masters sets return?
I think there's might be one that'll be happening next year, right? When was the last Master set? Was it Masters 25 or something? What was it called?
I think that was it.
A25.
Yeah.
And was that the one with Mana Drain in it?
No, it was one with Jace. Right. Well, Jace was in a couple of.
Iconic Masters was the one with
right.
Mana Drain. Okay.
Right.
So when was let me take a look here. When was Iconic Masters released?
Iconic or Masters 25? I think Masters 25 was more recent.
I wanted to go back to look at the actual timeline here. Mana Drain, Iconic Masters. I'm looking it up right here real quick. It looks like.
It's actually a problem that we can't remember which master set was when, because there were so many of them, and they all just blur in your head. They're no longer special anymore. But anyway,
yeah, those Eternal Masters too. That was 2016. Was Eternal Masters before?
Yeah,
Arcane Masters. Okay.
Yes.
This graph is a little messed up on MTG stocks. Give me one second. Yeah, here. Masters.
Efren's got some data here. So yeah,
okay.
Basically, Iconic Masters was last fall, and then
just 2017
spring was Masters 25. And I do think that people kind of got burnt out on all the Masters sets, and they Wizards made some sort of comment like, "Oh, we're not going to do them as often, or we're not going to do one every year." I forget what the exact verbiage was, but I definitely think that they're on like a hiatus. But I also think that they will come back. It's a matter of when, not if.
Yeah. Oh wait. Let this quiet.
But have they? When is like the big announcement day for like all the fall and winter products? Like I don't remember hearing much of anything. Did you?
No, I don't recall anything on that yet. So yeah, that's kind of a big question mark on when the next Master set is going to hit.
Yeah.
But then we have Modern Masters that'll be coming out probably next year, right? Because there was Modern Masters 2017, so we have. We have Modern Masters 2019 coming out.
I mean,
that's
an assumption. I mean, it may be a good one, but it's not a guarantee. They could do an Iconic Masters 2 instead, or Eternal Masters 2. They can reprint back to basics, make that a chase mythic.
Yeah, they could. But I think a safer bet would be the Modern Masters 2019, right? Because they've been doing it every 2 years.
Yeah, that's true. And I think there's enough demand for Modern out there to support it, but I'm just getting burnt down on those. I think we're all caught up, and it's only 2 minutes till 10. So
yep.
Do you have any last minute words to wrap up or?
With the exception of thanking everybody that is joining the channel and asking questions, I hope this was useful for everybody. And if anybody wants to follow up with any additional questions or follow-up questions, link up with us on social media, on Quiet Speculation, wherever you can find us. And, I'll do my best to answer any additional questions that you guys have. And again, thanks for joining the channel and making this really fun.
Yeah, I had a great time. I'll also add that if you guys like this and you want to do this again, be very vocal about this because, it's the first time we're doing this. It was kind of like a test. I think that there's a lot of potential here because, people are DMing me questions on like Twitter and Discord and stuff all the time. So I know that there are a lot of people who have different questions and want to get some advice. So, we are here. We're eager to do this like once a month or something like that. We just need to make sure that there's enough support from the community to justify doing it, essentially.
Yeah. And this was definitely, you guys are definitely huge support in this with this inaugural session.
Yeah.
So thank you again very very much to everybody that participated.
Yep. Perfect. Thank you. And with that, everyone have a good night.
All right. Have a good night, everybody. Talk to you guys next time.